Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so grateful that you tuned in tonight for this week's version of Raising Expectations. And you know how the program works. We're so excited we can't get our guest speaker on fast enough because we know and we love this man and his wife. They're part of our team. And I just wanted to give you a little, make sure I had it right. Craig, as you know, is a special trauma surgeon. He leads the program at a hospital in the foothills outside of Sacramento, California. And he's a native Californian. And the greatest thing that can be said, along with the work that he does, which his patients just love him, is that everybody who gets to know him as their doctor, as well as all of us who get to know him as our co-host, loves Craig Thayer. So Dr. Craig Thayer is going to talk tonight about the COVID. And so, Rob and Nancy Hansen, Dr. Paul Hall, and you know his precious wife, Stephanie, we're going to launch right in. So, guys, we're so thankful you're with us. Dr. Craig, thanks for being our friend. Thanks for being the great doctor you are. And we're going to turn this over to you, sir, and let you begin. And we just can't wait to hear what you're going to say and be part with you and with Stephanie. Craig, share with us.
Thanks, Joe. And I just want to thank this team. It's a unique group that I highly admire. It's part of my brain trust for theology and life, and appreciate the honor of being able to do this. So I got the chance kind of briefly to do a live Facebook when COVID first broke out because there were a lot of questions people had and didn't understand why or what and what to do. And so here I am again. So I titled this one, though, Where Faith and Science Unite, because I'm bringing Christianity into this at the same time. I challenged myself to a 90-day challenge, and part of that's being bold and mind, body, and spirit. And this is part of the spirit work. So I want to kind of discuss where I came from and so people know who my background is. So I was born in Monterey, California, to a natural mother who then gave me up for adoption after 10 days of having me. And she had a strong faith in Christianity and mandated that whoever adopted me continue that. And I was adopted by an Irish Catholic mom who came over when she was 21. And so that was my upbringing, was formal Christian training till I was confirmed, and then part of a rebel spirit, and then the ultimate scholar is the ultimate skeptic, and here I am now. So, but my science training is... I went to a high school that was public, but my wife will say, yeah, you went to one that was the only public school on the U.S. News top 50 high schools in America. So I grew up on Providence Court. So I was privileged. These things are probably not coincidences.
God has a sense of humor. I love that.
Well, then I went to UC Davis for 14 years. So the first four, I was a biochem major. So I learned about the body at a molecular level. And now I can say after going to med school and then doing a 6-year general surgery residency and learning everything from the body from head to toe that I'm a molecular physiologist. So it's kind of unique training, and there's not many people that get that blessing. So, and for me to understand things, I like to know the background of where they came from and why we do these crazy, stupid things. So let me just go quickly as I can, try to minimize the science to something that everybody can understand. So, the COVID was like a real-time experiment to the world. So we've never seen the virus before, this particular one. We didn't know how contagious or how bad it was. We didn't really know what it was made of until we did. And then it was an RNA virus, so it's very close to the flu virus. But and that's kind of what we matched that against. So that being said, we look back to our plagues. So in history, in 1300, we had the Black Death. That was what it was originally called. Now we call it the Black Plague. 1300 AD, 450 million people were killed in that plague. A lot of them were, just sick to begin with because they were starved and so on. And the next real big plague was the Spanish. Well, let me go back. The Black Death, we had Greek medicines. So you worried about phlegm, bile, black bile, and blood. It wasn't medicine. It was weirdo stuff. Then you had Spanish flu, which was 1918. This is influenza A. This is what we vaccinate for every year. It's an RNA virus. It's close to what we think COVID was going to act like, but not completely, because it's not completely the same virus. It has five strands of mRNA, and COVID's got one, and it replicates in a certain direction, like reading a book from right to left. That's more accurate in uncoding RNA versus left to right, which makes a bunch of mistakes. So that particular plague or flu killed 20 to 50 million people. It was interesting because 99% of those deaths were in people under the age of 65.
Yeah.
Over 50% were in the age between 20 and 40. And about a quarter of everybody in a hospital died overnight. All the docs and nurses were out in Europe from the end of World War II, or World War I, sorry. So that's why they weren't even seen. So it was apples to oranges. But that's what we learned, that distancing, actually what the biggest advancement was Camp Brooks. If you want to look up Camp Brooks, Massachusetts took their local military and created an outdoor open-aired hospital. And they socially distanced. They had a mask that was made of wire with five gauze that they would sterilize every 2 hours. They had extreme hygiene. And they had a surgical top, not a gown. And those were the big things. And the mortality at a hospital was 40%. The mortality of Brooks was 10%. So this is why we now, 6 feet distance, wear masks, gown, and hand hygiene. So that's where that all came from, was the Spanish flu. Evidence-based, because it reduced mortality by, 400 times, four times. The next outbreak we had was HIV in 1981. Mm-hmm. Actually, they saw this virus in the 1920s, but there was no outbreak. And in 1981, we began what we call universal precautions. And that means we treat everybody the same as if they're carrying hepatitis, CMV, any infectious disease, we treat them the same. And really the biggest thing that came out of that were the laws, because there were doctors that were refusing to take care, especially surgeons, HIV patients that were at risk for being exposed. So the laws in 1988, part of the Disabilities Act, included that you're like firefighters, you're first responders, you're mandated to take care of these people. And that was the appropriate ethical thing to do. And then in 2003, SARS hit. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that was the first time the world looked at the 29 countries that got hit and said, we need to, on a world basis, isolate this. And they did the same things that we did with the flu, which was, distance, hygiene, masks. And then we added gowns, and we added some ventilator cleanings for people who are on ventilators, because we didn't have ventilators back in, the 1918s, and full gowns. And then that reduced, basically, that infection was contained within 9 months, and only 774 people died from that flu. Although a lot of those, and also it was a virus that came from a China bat, so similar to what we're facing now. These viruses are spread by, just so you know, by droplets. So if you sneeze or cough on someone or sing
or spit,
yeah. So that's why the mask reduces for yourself, because you're not going to get those. It needs to go in your nose or your eyes. So don't rub your eyes or pick your nose. So simple thing, you think, but a lot of people do it in cars thinking they're not seen. So
it wasn't a pick.
Sometimes look.
Okay.
No one knows you're in the car. They think you think you're there all alone. And then, yeah. How many times have you seen that? So anyway, and then 2014 was Ebola. This one was 40% lethal. And it killed two surgeons in West Africa out of eight. And they started to cancel elective cases. They did some other things, full protective garments, full gown, gloves. They came up with what's called the PAPR. So it's a head unit that goes over you, fully self-contained, filtered air, positive pressure. So you can't breathe any aerosolized, which is the other way you can get it. So if you're in a room with a choir singing, like in Atlanta, and you're there for over an hour, and you're downwind from the air vent, 75% of you will get the COVID and 25% upwind. So it just aerosolizes the whole room. But it's in the air. Now you start to breathe it, and that's the other way you get it. So Ebola also started using gloves. So those are all the things that we use now. Now COVID-19, the key is trying to reduce the peaks. We had a peak in July, and we had another peak on December 12th of this year from Thanksgiving, no pun intended. Because it was Thanksgiving. It was people now not sheltering, not doing the 6 foot, not wearing masks, that now you create this outbreak that then spreads. The serious thing about COVID, though, is the incubation time. So the average incubation time is 5 days, rounded up. So you're completely asymptomatic for 5 days. And then the average, 50% of you, 90% of you are symptomatic by 11 days. So there's still 11 days you may be completely asymptomatic and shedding virus. And, you know, the greatest example currently is that poor guy that wore the Christmas tree costume at whatever place he worked, has a fan to inflate it, and he didn't know he had COVID and basically infected 45 people, one of which died.
Blow up costumes on, you know, that keep circulating the emergency room to encourage and boost morale, and he gave it to everybody and he didn't know.
Mm.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things about the peak in July was, it's like I said, science real time. We figured out what really does work. So even though the peak was bigger in December, the mortality rate was a third less. So we've learned things that make sense, that do kill people, and that don't work at all. So there's a cocktail now for COVID. You know, vitamin D and C seem to help. We're going to use it because it has really no side effect. Zinc is the same way. And then if you have a pneumonia, then we use two different antibiotics, usually either Zithro with this Azithromax pack, Zithropack, or, and then a Rocephin, which is broad spectrum, it's a cephalosporin. And so, or we'll use doxy, which is like what you use for malaria. It's broad spectrum for all the weird organisms that you can get from being immunosuppressed with now a virus. And then we've learned that it's not like trauma, where we've given a ton of blood or fluid to keep you out of shock, or where you were in what we call septic shock. You have an overwhelming infection that your body's starting to leak fluid into the tissue, including the lungs, and now your lungs are just filled with fluid and they're stiff. It's not like that. It's more like an altitude pulmonary edema. So the pressure's different. So, and for those people, you treat with Decadron or a steroid as an anti-inflammatory, and that makes a big difference. And then in extreme cases, we'll add the antiviral med, which does work, which is remdesivir. And so that's the cocktail, and that works, and that saves, like I said, a third more people that were dying before. We prone people, that's a physiology thing where you actually lay them on their stomach when they're on a ventilator. So there's a bunch of things that we've done that improve that. So that's the science behind why we do the crazy things we're doing. I look at my life in the universe that God created. God has a purpose and a purpose over all. And so that being said, I always ask myself, because I love the brain teasers of, okay, why is this happening? Why did the Capitol get raided? Or, you know, in this case, why COVID? What's the purpose? And so it allowed me to kind of really think about that. And I wrote, I'm going to read it correctly. So I'm going to get rid of that. I love technology. So it'll sound kind of like the stupid science brain that I am, which is, this is like a mathematical geometric proof.
Nerd alert.
Kind of if I'll call you and raise you on the nerd thing, okay?
Yeah, I know. You always do. I love you, man. So here's what I wrote. God is purposeful always. God is in control always. You could argue that Satan is the ruler of this world, but God allows that. God created nature, which we study and call science. God created COVID, or at least allowed it for a purpose. To understand that purpose, we must study its effects. It is spread by droplets and aerosolization from our respiratory tract. It is very contagious. We get it by inhaling and or contact with surfaces that we then touch our eyes and or nose, not mouth. It has a long asymptomatic incubation time during which you are shedding viruses. This has led to the shelter in place, distancing, wearing masks, closure of all social activities, especially entertainment like pro sports, restaurants, church. It has also led to homeschooling, time off work, loss of jobs, pregnancies, divorces, depression, suicides, especially women between 30 and 45, six times higher, anger, hate, and riots. If you were downrange, isolation, loss of physical contact with your family, especially your spouse, it kills the obese and the elderly the most. It can pass through the healthy unnoticed. It has made us slow down and reflect on what we took for granted, socializing, gathering in church. Is God saying, I can overcome all things in him, pray and not be of this world? You'll be fine if you have faith in me. So if he's saying, just ignore the risk and you'll either be fine, but be the vector spreading it to the obese and elderly, or die if it is his will, you'd become either a murderer or a martyr. What did Jesus say when asked, of the commandments, which are the greatest? He said, love God and love thy neighbor. That said, is it about being faithful and selfless? That means not walking around ignoring it and being the vector spreading it. It means slow down, get family focused, spend time with your kids, teach them, gather minimally in person, and if so, at a distance, protecting if closer. Protecting yourself, not for you, but for others. And finally, realizing how powerful God is. That's where science and faith are united. It also kind of made me look at Psalms 23. You know, it starts out saying, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It's like, he's got control, he's got me covered. Just relax. And, you know, he makes me lie down in green pastures, kind of take a break, be quiet. He leads me beside still waters, not running. It's quiet. He wants us to be quiet and listen, right? He restores my soul. So he recharges my mind. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake, of which we should do. But then here's the question. So I'm like scratching my head, and this is why I'm turning this around to you guys, because you are huge theological brains for me. He turns the pronoun differently. Before it was about what he was doing. Now it's about what we do. Yeah, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your
rod and staff comfort me.
Your rod and your staff comfort me.
Sorry. All the days of
my... I can't read my own writing. I'm a doctor. Okay,
you prepare a table for me in the presence.
So again, is that just ignore and he's got me covered because he's had me, you know, he wants, or do you, you know, love thy neighbor and do the right things? Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
That's wonderful. I have a million questions, of course, naturally, but I'll only ask a couple more. But one thing that you didn't bring up was the hydroxychloroquine aspect. And right. I had heard that, I guess with the other, the zinc, the D and the C, and there, is it the resveratrol, was the cocktail? Yeah. And by the way, we are issue with C, D, and zinc combination. So.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about quinine derivative, one of those is, but when we got back from Honduras, went to Honduras just before COVID was coming out, not in America, or maybe there were a few cases. And then we got back March 12th. We barely got back.
California was closed.
Guatemala was closed while we were there. So if we were getting out that way, it wouldn't happen. And so we got back. And that morning that we got back, we went to the supermarket and all the junk food's gone. The produce is still there. And apparently diet tonic is a survival fluid. You think you'd want calories in regular tonic, but diet was gone. The regular tonic was totally there. So it's got quinine, which is a derivative. Quinine was taken off the medical list because it causes funny heart rates that give you heart attacks and you die.
Really?
And chloroquine does the same thing. So it may work, but you need to be on a monitored bed in the hospital to make sure that your heart doesn't go berserk.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they restrict that as a recommendation because you need to be monitored. You need to be in a hospital bed.
Okay. When you're saying, you know, hitting the obese and the elderly, where does elderly start out of curiosity?
We've taken the grand mark of 65 or above.
65 or above?
65, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously the morbid ones, which have BMIs that are, you know, above 40. Mm-hmm. The reason why is their fat circulating in their bloodstream is inflammatory. If you eat, you can be in great shape and you eat a really fatty keto diet. We've talked about this before. It raises all your heart enzymes like it's inflamed. So it causes, and that's the cause of vascular disease. So your carotid arteries, your legs, and your heart, when the wall becomes inflamed, it starts to lay down plaque, which then builds up and gets narrowed. And then you have a clot and you have a heart attack or a stroke. So your membranes in your lung seem to be a COVID choice. It's fertile ground for COVID. It's for some reason loves to inflame them, cause a leak of the capillaries that then make the membranes really thick and filled with fluid, harder for you to breathe. And then you can't exchange oxygen as well at some point. And then if you get pneumonia, it's even worse.
Some of the previous things too were considered as COVIDs. I don't remember exactly. This is COVID-19, I guess, that we're dealing with. But the previous, whether it was SARS or COVID also, and that's just a type of virus, I guess.
It's a coronavirus, which is the same group of virus. And it's an RNA virus. And it is a SARS. It's SARS COVID-2.
Also China bats.
So it is a SARS virus. Yeah, so it's kind of like saying you've got muscles, but now you want to be more specific. You've got a bicep. So it's just a subclass of muscles. In this case, it's a subclass of coronaviruses.
Okay, and the RNA is ribonucleic acid. Is that what that is?
Yeah, so DNA is the templates, the double helix, which we never made. Viruses are a unique entity. They're not really living. They're packaged by your own membrane. So they're like taking a piece of paper that has stuff on it, information, and it somehow makes its way to a copy machine, which is your cell. And then it throws itself into the copy machine. It makes a bunch of copies of it, and then it will then create that into a pool that then comes through the cell wall, stealing your membrane as it goes off.
It's weird.
It's amazing. It's like, oh, yeah. And if you're a computer programmer, you could see coding is what it's all about. So it codes and it uses your whole nucleus and ribosomes and stuff to make its own products that then bunch together and come out of the cell, and now our new virus, a copy of itself.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, one thing that I found interesting, my sister, who's 65 now, she did everything right since this whole thing started back in, I don't know, March. And she's done. She lives near, well, west of St. Louis, Missouri. And it was masking, social distancing. She had a couple of the twins.
Yeah,
that are sensitive, have asthma and that sort of thing. So she took special care of herself and was thinking consciously about not wanting to give anything to these kids or anybody else for that matter. And having done everything right for 9 months, she got COVID about a month ago. It started with headaches, and she's fine now, by the way. So you don't have to worry.
So it was a mild case.
Yeah, it was a mild case. And she had headaches, she had nausea, and it lasted maybe, 5 days or a week at the most?
Well, yeah, about a week.
Yeah. And then we went to Nancy's nephew's house for Christmas, and there were about 15 to 20 people there, yeah. I guess. And, well, there probably wasn't so much social distancing.
I mean, we had tables set up outside, you know, and there were
separate. Perfect, yeah.
Part of the table and such. Yeah. And it was sunny and it was nice in Arizona, of course, yeah. Being outside. And my nephew and his wife ended up getting it. So we had to, hunker down for 14 days. After that, we were fine.
We had no indications, no symptoms, no high temperatures, no headaches.
Yeah.
And I guess it sort of begs the question. I mean, in California, it's been pretty much on lockdown for the longest time, too. And yet, you know, people are still getting it and some are dying. Although, again, I go back to there was a CDC thing back in August that talked about, you know, 94% of the people that were dying had underlying conditions like the obesity, like the seniors. In nursing homes and that sort of thing.
Heart problems.
Yeah, heart problems, pneumonia, obviously. But we never know. I mean, the media will tell us, you know, we've got a record number of cases. Well, you know, to me, that doesn't really tell me a whole lot because a virus is just going to go do its virus thing no matter what we as humans do. It's going to spread. And people are going to get infected just like the flu, just like any, you know, virus that's out there. And sometimes I worry that with all this hunkering down, that people are thinking that, you know, if we just do this a little longer, if we just, you know, 6 more weeks, 100 more days, 10 more years, something, you know, it's going to magically disappear, but it's not. And I also worry about, again, not knowing what the right thing really is to do because I'm not medically trained. But I worry that people have gotten into this mode of thinking where whatever it is that either the media or health professionals or Dr. Fauci tells you has got to be true, doesn't it? Or whatever the CDC or the WHO that I guess we're joining again.
And then it does change.
And then it changes and mutates. Now we have a British one and a South African one.
Well, I mean, the rules change.
Oh, the rules change, yeah.
You know, and it's like, you don't know what to do. So what do you do?
Stop living in fear.
Okay, so here I'll go through the faith part, right? So when you make plans, God laughs.
Always.
You know, and when you rely upon of this world things like I can make a vaccine and I can, and we do this, part of my argument, I mean, it makes more sense to just give faith to God and, you know, but we also need to discern. So where is that balance? And so that's the theology I would love from you guys too. So, but you're right. I mean, if you look at science, we need a herd immunity. So how do we get that? Well, we vaccinate as fast as we can. And we're, to be honest, we're not doing it. I mean, I would volunteer at a stadium and give me your name, show me your license, let me write it down. I'll give you the CDC card. I'll stab you in the arm and then there you go. Yeah. And then I need you back in 21 days for the second vaccine because that's the data. So, and then we get it done quick instead of this, you know, all this HIPAA crap and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and you're right. There is a balance. I mean, clearly the suicide's up. Depression's huge. Every single of my OB colleagues have said, when the ladies are coming in, are you depressed? They're all checking. Absolutely. So there's a balance in kids. The Germans let their kids go to school. They did okay. They clearly spread it to their family. So if their family's pretty, but you also said there's that 6 to 12% of people that are perfectly healthy and they die. So it's like, we don't know. There may be a gene we've identified, but we don't really have, it's science of progress. So that's why you're seeing a change as we're going along. And we know the things that reduce it. I've coined a term called viral promiscuity or promiscuity.
Promiscuity.
If I'm out about,
I know that word.
Because people understand herpes.
Yeah.
So it's a virus you don't want. It keeps giving. So that said, the more people you sleep with, the more people you slept with,
exactly.
Right? Everybody understands that. All the partners they've had before them, you've had. So you gather. It only takes one person. That's it. You gather with them. You've just potentially, if they've gathered with a bunch of people that didn't mask, didn't care, sang in a small room, spit on you, that person is risky to you. So the family members you mentioned, all it took was one of those people. And the reality is the distancing, the masking doesn't have 100%, not giving. It's like a condom. So you still can get things. You can still get pregnant for that matter. So it prevents. The key to medicine is not, it'd be great if it stopped it, but you're right. The herd needs to get immunized. The chicken pox, I think my mom took me over to a family house just to get it. I didn't get it until I was 25 as a resident. So, similar, probably should do that with the kids without the teachers involved, because a lot of teachers are not as healthy as they think. They're stuck. They can't even go pee because they're in the classroom all day. So they can't eat. She's got a ton of clients that are teachers.
I want to say something with your question, Rob. I think it's very hard because this conversation is a health conversation and it's also a political conversation. And so people tend to get very strong on one side of that. It's really interesting. In the small community that we live in 1918, you can see an article for a parade and everyone in the town was wearing the masks. And a lot of what passed around at that time was military, right? That didn't have a choice to distance and that sort of thing. But they respected it and none of them lost any of their civil rights or liberties. Now, are the politics today the same as 1918? Why is someone asking you to do that? The argument of California, and we've had very tough restrictions and we still have these huge numbers. Well, it's virtually not enforceable. I know more people that do not follow the requests than follow the requests. So it's so hard to know how effective it is or isn't when we don't actually have populations really doing the thing, right? And long-term, no one wants to do this for 10 years, and there's a bigger risk to our society, our economy. And so I think it's so complicated for people to navigate what the truth is.
I agree.
There's another phenomenon that
policy thing more than political, but I think it's been taken over by political folks.
Right.
I think too, our immune system must have something to do with the ability to either resist or fight or not get the symptoms of COVID-19. I'm assuming it's an immune system issue that fights, our immune system gets built up from birth, I guess, to, fight when we were little kids eating mud pies and drinking out of a water hose and
snails, eating snails.
And we get this stuff and we, and now, of course, everybody's sort of terrified of this this COVID virus. I worry sometimes that we're just trying to be too sanitary, and that like a vaccine can provide herd immunity. Is it not then true that catching it and having it passed on, and again, 99% roughly, I guess, survival rate for those that don't have underlying conditions. Is that not also considered a way to go through herd immunity as well?
We don't know.
And then they catch it, and then somebody else, and so on.
We think so. But here, I want to say something about the survival rate. So we personally know hundreds of people that have had it. We know some that have died. we know quite a few that have lingering problems from it, not mm-hmm. breathing, very achy, bad headaches, can't taste for almost a year. So survival, but what's the long, we don't know what the long-term implication is. We have no idea. So it's also a quality of life thing, but you're right. My theory, I'm not a doctor, but my theory is we have to at least get to the 70%+, and that could be everybody gets it, everybody gets immunized, or some combination, right? And until we hit something like that, mm-hmm. I don't think what we do is going to stop it. It's going to keep going, right?
I agree. And that's, I mean, I think it's good, social distancing and masks and doing everything we can. But we have to understand we've been doing this for, what, 11 months now? We're going on 11 yeah. months. And everybody's still
getting better.
Yeah, and it's not really getting better. And now they're talking about mutations and this and that. And so now we have this whole new thing to worry about with a new type of virus that the vaccine coming out now may not necessarily work with or for to prevent. I just worry that a lot of people, well, I'm usually confused by the whole thing because I'm not medically trained and I'm just kind of confused anyway most of the time for almost every right. reason possible. But I think, you know, common sense doesn't seem to always enter into the picture, and maybe it should sometimes, that it's a virus, a high survival rate, some die, but then some have died from chickenpox, some have died from the flu, some have died from everything. And I may have mentioned, I forget, a few months ago, looking up numbers when I was on a numbers kick, between 7,000 and 8,000 Americans die each day. Okay, so if you say 30 days, between 210,000 and 240,000 people die every month. Okay, now that's just without the COVID. I read somewhere a couple weeks back that the annual or daily monthly death rates were not significantly different over the 2019 from previous years, even with the COVID. And again, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if what the experts are coming out saying is true or not. I mean, Dr. Fauci mentioned that initially, well, you know, you don't have to wear a mask. You know, it's no problem. And then all of a sudden we went into this, everybody has to wear a mask or we're all going to be dead. And then he came out just recently with something that he changed his mind on again, that, well, we didn't have to worry about these foreign COVID mutations, but I guess now we do. So, yeah. I mean, even the experts can't seem to agree.
So you look, yeah, the new UK virus and the other one, the mutations, it's got a spike protein. So it's a protein that helps the virus bind to the cell wall and then spike it so it can get in. All the rest of the virus is the same. So our vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, will cover those. It's okay. Got a 50% higher contagious rate, but the mortality and morbidity are the same. So it's easier to get, easier to spread, but it's not killing more people. So, mm-hmm. or it'll spread faster, but you're right. There's going to be this herd immunity that we don't really know. We may think there may have been one recurrent case, mm-hmm. but we're not sure. And you would think that if you get the whole package of that virus, that you're exposed to every antigen in the world for that virus, you should have better immunity than the 5 antigens they put in the vaccines. So, So common sense says that the getting it should give you better immunity then. And I guarantee you, the people who have had it that didn't know it, it's almost diagnostic. When they get the vaccine, they feel horrible.
Really sick.
Yeah, they're really sick. Their immune system's already geared up. And so just a background on immune systems, amazing. This in the last 5 years, all these monoclonal antibodies. So we have two components of that. We have a cellular response, like plasma cells and T killer cells that go after tumors and eat them up. And that's what the mAbs do in killing melanomas now and other cancers. And then there's an inflammatory, like the skin diseases, psoriasis, asthma. They're a chemical inflammatory process. The remdesivirs and some other things control that and get your Crohn's disease and your psoriasis and stuff under better control when you take those. It slows it down. So that's why remdesivir works. So this virus is more of a chemical inflammatory disease than it is a cellular problem. So the other thing, this will be interesting for you, Rob, to hear, because you're in this group. You're a Top Gun pilot. You're a crazy guy out there. And so I, as I'm driving to this, Malcolm Gladwell, Canadian sociologist, half Jamaican mom, British Canadian dad, is a sociologist. He writes these books. This one book, David and Goliath, he's talking about World War II, when the government looked at London and they knew the Germans were going to bomb London. They said, this is going to be horrific. There's going to be 1.2 million deaths and there's going to be that many casualties. Mm-hmm. They built several psych hospitals for the panic and the psych. And they knew they were just a sitting duck, or in this case, a cow, as Churchill said. Mm-hmm. And when they attacked for 57 days in a row or nights, there was no panic. They didn't understand. So this sociologist, psychiatrist,
he's a journalist too.
Yeah. He looked at how this happened. So there's three groups. There's the ones that were killed. They're gone. They have no influence over the population other than them being family members and loss, right? But the ones that remain, there are now two groups left. There's the near miss, which I guarantee you, you've been through a million times in a plane. You flew an F-14 and there's like mechanical, whatever, close calls, right? So those near misses, they were wounded, they were stunned, they were in shock. Those people, every time the sirens rang, the fire bells rang, the ambulance were going, they had a sense of panic and they sensed that, right? It was real. And then the third group were the ones that were a block away. They'd hear the sirens. They could feel the vibrations, but they never got hurt. They were remote. And those people, this is the interesting group. Those people, because they were never hurt, got more confident to a point where they felt like they were invincible. It's a weird psychiatric thing that our brain can do. And I don't know, did you feel that like when you're in a plane that, man, I've gone through these near or close misses, but I feel invincible on this machine?
Well, I would never have felt invincible. However, I think back in the World War II days, especially the London Blitz, that's where that sign, you know, keep calm and carry on, actually came from. Because I think, you see the British Crown on a lot of those signs and memes and everything. But I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that you learn in aviation in training and in doing is don't get excited. Don't panic. Just stay calm. Right. Do what you're trained to do and keep yourself from entering into a panic stage. I think that's really important too. And I think mentally it's important for everybody that's thinking about, or worrying about or having fear going on with the COVID, probably the best advice you can give them is just calm down and relax. If you get it, you get it. Right. But the odds are, you can't stop it. And the odds are in your favor, you're going to live. But like Stephanie was saying though before, there may be, some problems, whether it's like scarred lungs or, problems tasting things or God knows what else. But the odds are very high that you're going to live and survive. So keep calm.
It's one of the things I do now is there's a daily what you should expect to be going through that I send to people, and I recommend that they buy a pulse ox because it gives them more peace of mind. Mm-hmm. You're going to get stiff lungs. You're going to, if you get this far by day 7 or 8, you're going to feel like you can't breathe that well. And then you're going to freeze because you feel like you're being waterboarded. And so you check your pulse ox. If you're 90 or above, you're fine. So, okay, now I feel better. And then by day 9 and 10, you're going to be starting to get better. And so there's light at the end of the tunnel. So I think that's helped a lot with people just knowing, and if you're not, then you need to go to if you're 90 or lower, you need to go to the ER, have a chest x-ray, see if you got pneumonia, and then full court press. Or you're still okay, you can go home, keep an eye on this.
Mm-hmm. You should ask Paul.
Guys, I think we need to go on with this. We got to do more on this, Tank. This is excellent.
You have any thoughts about the theology of what I said?
Yeah, I mean, I got all kinds of them, but we ran out of time. It's so interesting. It's really interesting. I know we're going to get a lot of thoughts. Keep the same notes.
Give it to Rob and I.
Yeah, we need 2 hours, man. Especially that third group that was standing in London. What an interesting concept, huh, guys, to think about that. I mean, I had a couple of my church that were in the Blitzkrieg, and they were just married, went through it all. And I remember them saying, not quite as eloquently as the sociologists would have said the way you shared it, but it was the same kind of thing. And, of course, they tied in like you're doing. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. They found their peace in knowing that God was in it. But, man, when you say about breathing, it's almost like swimming. Rob, I don't know how you fell out of the plane and had to breathe, you know, in testing to be a pilot. Remember, they had guys under the water like that? I think I'd start to panic. I'm a fairly good swimmer, surfed a lot. But, man, underwater sometimes I'd say, now, how long do I have to get to the top of the wave? But if I just let it take me, like you were saying, I'd relax a little bit. It wouldn't be as bad. What an interesting point for COVID to come in there. Mm-hmm. We only have about 3 minutes, and so I'm going to have to wrap us up tonight. But, I think what we want to do, we're getting so blessed by the Lord who's meeting these needs. And this is so exciting. Would you keep this together as you're writing on this and bring it back, like, I think the second week of March or so, I think, right after. I think we're booked through the second week of March. And let's go back at this. Maybe, Craig, in light of what we're seeing, you know, again, your insight on what we're seeing. And I'm going to have a lot of texts and messages coming in to me a lot on this. I'm going to move some of them on to you, brother, and let you look at these. And is that okay? And I'll send them on ahead. The text.
Yeah, that's fine. Let me help people, because I disguise myself in Facebook as Tank. So if you looked up okay. Craig Thayer, you're not going to find me.
Y'all put
So Tank Thayer, you'll find me on Facebook. So
Tank Thayer, I'll give them the secret code so they've got that one on there. You got that, Paul? It's Tank Thayer. Write that one down so we have it for them.
Questions for Tank?
They probably think they're enrolling or something. Watch out! I love it. What a great name, Stephanie. It's just great the way you your input too with him on both sides. And there's just a lot. The theological side is so exciting on this. I know Paul sitting there, I got things thinking about that, but what a great road we went down looking at this tonight. So in our last minute and a half, I just want you to know, Tank, remember this. Next week, we're going to have Laura and David Lester. You might remember, she's been studying COVID. I wish she could talk to you with David this week sometime in light of what you shared, Tank. But she's going to be with us on how COVID is affecting seniors in the retirement communities who are battling with Alzheimer's, and also Stephanie, how that works with their family, their related family. And you know, Rob, she's done a lot of reading and studying on this from the CDC material, Tank. And Paul, she just loves the Lord and walks with the Lord through all this. She could have lost all of both of her businesses, but she held on to them. So I've got 47 seconds. I want to thank you. They're going to take us out on this. Sorry, I had a little trouble coming in, but I think we made up for it. What a great discussion. So, hey, Ness, remember that. Let's get this down on the second week there in March, and let's have another reaction, another flyby. How's that, Rob? Pretty good? Another flyover.
We have the eighth covered.
The third week? Okay. Whatever it is, we're getting back. And the secret is Tank on Facebook. Tank there. That's what we'll do.
Can we do Rob a coffee jump for the flyby?
Yes, that's right. That's what we'll do.
I'm still waiting for Paul's theological thoughts. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. All right. Well, wave them off. And ladies and gentlemen, we're so glad you're with us tonight on Raising Expectations. Another flyby. Hi, wave a flag, but I don't have a small one, Rob. But what a great, great evening we've had. Thanks for tuning in with us tonight on Raising Expectations. Hey, get a hold of all of our team. Go to our Facebook page. There's also a place to donate. We'll be telling you. We got some exciting news to share on that with you coming up real soon. I got to share with the team. So in any event, check out the website, interact with our co-hosts. You never find better people anywhere, and you'll see what's happening with all of this. All right. God bless you. And we're going to sign off right now on behalf of everybody there. God bless you. God keep you. And may your expectations raise up each and every day. May we be that third group of people in London in the Blitzkrieg. And as Tank told us, remembering God's got this. We're in the grip of his grace. We can follow him day by day. Thanks so much. Waving off. Raising Expectations. See you next week.
Take care, you guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.